Hello, everyone. Welcome to my new show, The Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O, or Justin Ryan Bizarro. Again, that's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. You can find our show on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. Again, that's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. That's where I post most of the stuff. I have a very special guest with us today. I'm going to jump right into it. Monica Burke. She's an author. She's a motivator. She's a real estate guru, in my opinion. And she's written a book called Power On, Using What's Meant to Destroy You to Create You. So that's quite incredible. I'm very impressed that she's already written a book. She's already got it out there and published. But just so the crowd knows, we once recorded two episodes for Centurion Leadership Battalion that never got released a while ago. And I'm glad it didn't, because we're actually in a better space. I have a better platform to tell her story. I have more support than I did back then. And with the new additions in my life, I feel like her story, which is so important, I really want everyone to listen in. And we're probably going to do two parts to this story, because we talked about it beforehand, because her story and the details in her stories and her struggle. And as she even released the book, which is why we did the first two, was to release the book, things in her life have gotten difficult, but also better. And I think that this is an important story for anyone out there trying to grow in the world. You don't just get to where you are. You just don't get to success without a struggle. So, Monica, how are you doing today?
Hi, Justin. I am fantastic. Every day that I get to do something like this is just, you know, a dream. So I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's dive into this. Monica, I want you to take as long as you want. And I know a lot of this stuff is probably in your book, but let's talk about your story. Let's talk about like your childhood, how you grew up, what led you into the real estate business ultimately, and ultimately what had you write a book and sort of change your trajectory over the last few months.
Yeah. So just starting off, guys, I am that total underdog story. Like, that's, I see myself as the ultimate underdog. Even closely to Goggins, although he is physically way more capable than I am, for sure. I would say he wins the badass, but very childhood traumatic beginnings. I grew up early on. My dad caught AIDS and died when I was 6 years old. I remember him and my mom fighting a lot. His side of the family were full of drug addicts and prostitutes. His mother was like the ringleader of it all, and it was a lot. A lot of traumas early on, and just hardcore memories of things that were happening that my mom did not know. So I do want to be very clear. My mom was never a part of any of that. Like, that's not, she grew up in a very like Catholic, Christian, like straight lace. And she was just kind of dumped in this world that she just never even knew existed. And she got out. But at the time she got out, my dad was very sick. And her thought process was, he's going to die. This is the only time they're going to get with him. You know, I don't want to take that away from them. Like, she's a very strong woman. I don't think as a mother I could do that myself to this day. But she had no clue, I think, really what she was leaving us in harm's way while she wasn't around. And so we grew up in like the wild, wild west as kids up until about the age of six. You know, my dad would forget to bring us to school or pick us up from school, and he was busy partying and having a life that he wanted. He also ran a small convenience store that his real father and his parents that he met after he became an adult gave him the loan out of guilt. This is insane. So my grandmother was a prostitute and my grandfather was a cop.
Okay. I'm wrapping my head around this one. Yeah.
Like, so, but my grandfather had no clue about my dad until he was 18. So my dad was raised by his grandmother, not his mom. And she really tried to keep him from turning out like the rest of them. And she was a bit crazy herself. But when he turned 18, you know, he dropped out of school. He went and found them. And when he found them, my grandfather was not happy about it, but his new wife was. She was like, "This is fantastic. You have this son you didn't know about." He really wasn't happy about it, from what I know. But because of his wife at the time, he went ahead and formed a relationship with my brother and I and my dad. And my dad died before he did. So my dad, when he caught AIDS, he just was not in the position to really take care of us, but he wouldn't let us go back with my mom either. So once he got so bad to where he couldn't basically live, where he was hooked up to machines in the living room and everything else, that's when my mom took custody of us. And we went to live with her and my stepdad in a Section 8 apartment. And my stepdad was very militant. He was from the Army. He grew up in a very abusive father. And us coming in was upside down. I'm reading David Goggins' book right now called Never Finished. And when he talks about moving in with his grandparents from his like chaotic, dysfunctional dad's life, that's exactly what it was like, because his grandparents were super militant. And that's exactly the environment I went into. Like, there was no like, "I'm so sorry for the, you know, like where you just came from," or like therapy. That wasn't a thing at that time. He saw it, my stepdad saw it as like, "I need to fix these kids." And that's the only way he knew how.
It's interesting because I almost had the opposite thing happen. I grew up almost in a very, my parents were, I wouldn't say they were loving, but it wasn't outwardly. It was very strict, and we grew up on a farm and everything mattered about the animal's life. And I played on 3 soccer teams and I went to a good school, and everything was very structured and on time and scheduled. And, you know, which was interesting because my parents don't really live that way anymore, but everything was so structured that when I went to college and there was no structure and I started to find my own self and my creativity, I didn't know how to function without highly structured environments. And like, so I find this interesting, not because one's better or the other, but because that weird feeling of being lost or uncertain or scared or fear or what's going on around me. And I think probably going from either one to the other, when you're changing your environment, it can have an impact on the flower being you. And you're a flower, you grew and you figured out how to grow and survive in one environment, and then you're going to another environment and trying to grow and survive.
Yeah, it was completely opposite. I mean, the first week we moved in, you know, when I moved in, I had severe issues. I was developmentally behind educationally. Like, I couldn't really read math. I had a little bit of a speech impediment. Not only that, toppled with a lot of behavioral issues galore, lying, so much lying, and just always trying to get like the environment that I came from, all these things were acceptable. I mean, we were exposed to sexual things at a very young age. We were exposed to a lot of drinking and cussing. I mean, I remember going to parties with my grandma and her forgetting where she dropped us off at, because she was so, I don't know if we can cuss on here, but she was so fucked up.
Yeah, you can cuss.
she was so fucked up out of her mind. She had no clue where she dropped us off. My dad had to go door knocking. Luckily, I still remember the family that I remember being scared because I had no clue where I was or anything. But the family that took care of us were a really great family. I just remember how nice they were. And, you know, this is in a very poor part of Alabama. And they're African American family, and they were that was one of my earliest memories of being around someone of just completely different than me and feeling more loved. You know, the other thing is my dad's side of the family were completely racist. So, I mean, it was insane. Like one of my uncles, he would pull up to the side of, if there were black people outside, he would bang the side of his car and then throw rubber snakes at him. He kept rubber snakes in his passenger seat, which is so insane because I just always remember like how asinine this was, because these are like the worst people I've ever met in my life and they thought they were better than someone else. And so it's one of those things, like when you think about race and things like that in my life, my experiences, none of that made sense to me. So it's still like to this day, it does not make sense to me why we have some of the issues we have. I just don't understand why it's even an issue.
I want to anchor this a little bit with the audience, because I think what happens when we have these bad spiritual maladies and they come out as symptoms, which are alcoholism, drug abuse, sexual abuse, misunderstanding our sexuality, feeling like imposters. When we don't deal with it, and narcissism and stuff sort of start to creep up in this scenario, and to protect ourselves from ourselves, it almost allows us to project on other people what we're really feeling bad about ourselves, but in a way we don't realize that we're doing it as humans. And it's the weirdest thing that the human brain does in this function, is that we take it out on the world around us. We find ways to divide or discourage or give people doubt or things like that. And that division and making someone, particularly based on the outside appearance, feel that we're better than them because we have a different appearance, is a way for us to sort of feed this narcissism that exists because of these spiritual maladies that we've created that lead to really bad symptoms. But, you know, I find it around me. And believe me, like, I'm talking from experience, I'm talking from family members as well. And while my family was one way, you know, my relatives were another way, or the relationships I chose were the opposite of a lot of things. So I've seen this rear its head in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, when I've had a spiritual malady and I've had symptoms, I can sometimes, you know, I haven't done in a long time, but I can project on what's really wrong with me or my insecurities on someone else and call it whatever it is. You talked about lying. It's, you know, lying to yourself. Believe me, I've been in that environment. Lying to protect myself, lying to keep the perfectionism of the family, lying to make sure no one knew what was really going on with me. And then you become so good at it, you believe it, you know? So,
yeah. It's interesting too, because, you know, I posted this picture of me, which, as we go into the story, guys, I've lost over 115 pounds over the last 3 years. I had a binge eating disorder, which stemmed from a lot of this type of stuff. And, that picture of me, it was funny because I posted it on my Facebook and Instagram, and I was like, oh my God, like, I, you know, you look back and you forget how bad you were sometimes until you see a picture. And someone had put, you know, the scary thing is, Monica, I never saw this side of you ever. All I saw was someone that was fighting for their family. I never saw any of these inside issues that you were going through ever. And I was like, I got really good at hiding. I'm still really good at hiding. People are like, you handle stress so well. And sometimes I don't realize, because I'm a very high functioning person with that, how stressed out I really am until I let go of something. And then I'm like, oh my God, I just feel so much better now. But I don't even realize how stressed I am until I let go of it. And so sometimes that detriment, but no matter what your trauma is, we all have one. We all have them as a kid. Maybe your parents were great and you didn't have this kind of severe trauma, but you've had trauma in your life of some sort. And pain is pain. You know, I'm telling you guys my story, and you could be thinking, oh my God, that is horrible. But I'm telling you, my pain is no different than your pain. And it's no greater, or it's no less than. It can cause a lot of things if you let it, no matter what that trauma is. And so Just continuing into the story, you know, that was the childhood. So when I went into this militant household, my stepdad, the first week I got grounded for lying. And I remember just looking at my stepdad going, what does that mean? Like, I'm like, I have no clue. I've never heard those words in my life. And he thought I knew. And I just looked at him and I had no clue what he was talking about. I was like, he was talking another language. And I was like, okay, so can I go outside and play? And he's like, you have no couth. He's like, you're not afraid to ask anything, are you? And I was like, I don't even know what this means. You know, as it that kid. And he's like, I'm like, so I got in more trouble. And I just remember asking, I did say, I don't know what this means. And that's when it dawned on him for the first time, really how we had been kind of living our whole life. And he's like, grounding means you don't do anything. Like, grounding means you stay in your room with nothing. Like, I mean, I spent a lot of years as a child with all of my toys, everything taken away, and spending full days in my bedroom, just sitting on my bed with not allowed to do anything else. But that was all a blessing because I learned how to create in my imagination. I learned how to live in a world that wasn't the world I saw in front of me. I remember telling myself, this is temporary. I remember telling myself that as a kid. I remember praying. Also, I remember as a kid that I remember wishing I could just die. I would talk about death a lot. I talk about I just wanted to die after my dad died. So there's a lot of that, just feeling like I hated myself and not even understanding the pain, you know? There's a reel I saw and it said, I remember feeling a lot as a kid that nobody, it's not that I didn't feel like I didn't have anybody. I just felt like nobody had me. And that's exactly what it felt like. Like, I just felt like nobody had me. I had adults around me that I could go to, but I just felt like nobody had me. And so what that teaches you as a kid is you've got to figure it out. And that was another thing in my parents' household. So we had to say, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. It wasn't okay. It wasn't, yeah, sure. It was yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. We woke up at 6 a.m. We got ready for the day. We got ourselves ready. We ate. We got our chores done when we got home. We did our homework. And then if there was time left, we got to play. But in the beginning of that, I was so far behind that was not an option for me. And I remember spending many hours at the kitchen table with my stepdad, who he had more patience than my mom did with me, and would just keep teaching me math in a way that I could understand it, because I was not getting it from the way the school was teaching it at all. He really had that military background. So yes, he was hard on me, but he also was like, no man left behind. You know, in the military, you don't leave soldiers on the ground. You take care of them. And so I got very blessed that my stepdad was my dad, because I do believe that, you know, later on, like, if my dad would have lived and continued to have raised me, I would definitely not be the person you see today. That would not have happened. So he taught me structure. He taught me he gave me that, you know, I can push through even when I don't want to do something. My parents taught us extreme independence. My mom, there were times when I'm like, I don't get these things, especially like middle school and high school. Once I kind of gotten past that initial hump and I accelerated, my mom, if I didn't understand something, she's like, well, you have a book, figure it out. It's up to you. You better not fail or you will be in trouble, but you better figure it out. Like, that's the way I grew up. And it's kind of funny because now my parents are always like, why can't you just let someone help you? It's ironic.
I actually agree with that 100%. Like, everything was do it on your own. And even when I asked for help and they would help a little bit, I mostly had to figure things out on my own, which now I agree with you. I have trouble accepting help. I have trouble receiving help. I can be stubborn, you know, especially when people are generous. I don't trust it. And but the point I want to anchor is this, is that your parents want you to be these independent superstars, but then when you get older, they're like, well, why do you take it all on? Why do you do all, well, I don't know how else to do it. Or the only way that I've found success is to do it this way, is to do it on my own, to rely on myself. It, you know, even though I grew up in team sports in a team environment, there was still this very much sense of self and being self-responsible. And if there was a problem with the team, it was up to me to fix myself, and then the team would do better. And while that's true from leading by example, it's not true in providing solutions, you know.
No, exactly. It's definitely been a learning curve as an adult, for sure. And I'm sure it's been the same for you, because when you grow up in that extreme, my mom, I mean, even at high school, like, you know, the only subject I ever failed, I actually graduated high school early because I got pregnant and I had transferred with more credits from Texas to Oklahoma in high school. I was an A student, an AB student. I did good enough to fly under the radar to keep people, my parents, off my ass for the most part. But did I push myself? No. Did I find learning fun? No. I went to school for the social aspects, and that is what I always fell in love with. I did try every sport. I was rejected over and over throughout middle, high school, elementary. I mean, I tried out for cheerleading. The school we went to in Alabama only have 500 students between the middle and high school. And I tried out for cheerleading. There was like 8 of us trying out. And they rejected everybody but like 2, which were like the popular girls in this very small school. So it felt like life was unfair. That was my life. Like, everything was always unfair. Not only did I have all those things and I had bullies at home, I had bullies at school. So I would go to school, get picked on, get made fun of. I would come home and then it would just be a lot of yelling and nothing's ever good enough. And so I took a lot of that on as a child. And it really wore on me. And now that I look back, you know, when I got in high school, I remember just kept thinking, well, at least I'm not like the rest of my dad's side of the family. Like, if I was like them, I'd be pregnant by now. At least I'm not pregnant by now. And guess what? I ended up pregnant at 17, because your mind moves to what it's most familiar with. And the more I said that to myself, the more I moved in that direction without even knowing it.
It's what they talk about. It's like race car drivers. Don't look at the guardrail. You're going to drive the race car into the guardrail. And we do that as humans. Like, the thing we fear the most is the very thing we drive ourselves towards.
I was like, at least I'm not into drugs and stuff. And guess what? Within years later, I started experimenting with street drugs and stuff. I never got addicted. Like, luckily, nothing I ever tried hit that spot for me of numbing. My addiction was food. That was my, because I was always looking to numb. And for whatever reason, like, food was one of those things I could just eat and eat and eat, and there was never a bottom to it. Like, I could be totally stuffed but not feel anything. And so, yeah, like, there was that, you know. There was years after having kids, I was not the best mom. I have a lot of regrets around that. Not that I was a horrible mom where I just, but I was falling so close in line with the people I never wanted to be, the people that I despised, the people that I allowed to be a victim to. And, you know, I spent my early 20s just drinking a lot, eating a lot, and then staying up till 3 in the morning. I mean, just looking for these people to see where they were and seeing, wanting to know how miserable that they, I just wanted to know that they felt my pain so bad. And none of them did, because that's life. You know, you get stuck in the maze. If you've ever seen Stutz, that show on Netflix, it's really good. He talks about getting stuck in the maze. I got stuck in the maze for years. I've lost years in that maze. And these people, they're going on with their life. You're so resentful of them, of the things that they've done to you, but they don't care less.
Yeah, we almost get so caught up in trying to fit in, we don't belong. We don't focus on belonging, which is being ourselves. We get so focused on trying to fit in or what everyone else has or comparison, which leads to suffering, that we spin ourselves in that maze or run around that maze for sometimes some people do it for an eternity, like the whole life they're in that maze and they never get out of it.
For me, it took, there are a lot of things, but it really took just being so miserable inside and out and I don't want to live this way. But it also took one night of partying. So my parents moved out of state. They moved a lot. I stayed here in Oklahoma with my husband and my kids and stuff. So they moved when my oldest was only like two, out of state again. And they've moved a lot ever since then. But they would take the kids because they were out of state over summer for a couple of weeks because they wouldn't see them all year. And they would get them for a couple of weeks during the summer. And we always made sure that would happen. But when they were gone, my anchors, the only thing that I had that kept me somewhat in line were my kids, because I would be like, I can't lose my kids. I mean, that was I hate to admit that, Justin. I really do. That was my thought process. It's like, I just don't want to lose my kids. So I wasn't really making decisions out of what's best for them, just like the bare minimum. As how I worked my brain was. And
I think that kids, even me with children that are Deborah's children and still a part of my life, you're willing to do things for them that you wouldn't. I mean, there's been times recently, not since I've known you, but before that, where I was really down and I was suffering from a lot of panic attacks and imposter syndrome, not the cliche term, but the real diagnosis of it. And I lost my identity and I felt like dying, like killing myself, like a lot. And even with all the success and all the money and all the stuff, if it wasn't for my kids or Deborah's kids that I see as my own children, I would have probably done the same thing. Like, it's a weird thing that when you think about the impact you're going to have on others, or that protective nature that you have as a parent or a step parent, or however you want to look at it, or a parent figure, if you're, you know, however the children, when you do call them, however that works, because you got to respect their wishes also, I think is a powerful tool. And I agree, it's kind of warped, but on the end, it's kind of selfish in a lot of ways, and you're putting the children through some things that they probably shouldn't go through. But if they're the ability to keep you from doing wrong or doing something bad to yourself, I feel like that's a powerful thing. And children play that role oddly in our lives if we allow them to.
For sure. They've saved my life multiple times. They were gone. And we were out partying, and when we went out partying, because when they were gone, it was like all hands off. Like, you know, there's nothing, no responsibilities besides work. Like, I never stopped working. And you guys got to know that about me too. I've always worked 40, 50 hours a week, went to college while I worked, took care of my kids pretty much by myself because my husband worked nights and weekends. So it was up to me to do the 9 to 5, to go to college at night, to make sure I got them fed, to make sure I got them in bed, to get them to school. So it was like being a single mom, even though I wasn't, because all my husband had to do at that time was go to work and come home and sleep. And so I've always been that person. I'm not afraid of work. I've never been afraid of work. I had a job at 15. I've always wanted the freedom. I didn't want my parents telling me what I could or couldn't do. You know, and that comes with that huge sense of independence too, of like, you know what, fine. If I have to work so that you can't control me, I am down for that. Like, any day of the week. I have never understood people whose parents pay for everything for the control. And then they complain about the control their parents have. I'm like, just go get a job.
I'm the same way. From the day I was like 3 years old, like, I don't want you to tell me what to do. I'm going to go earn my own money. Teach me how to use a lawnmower. I'll pay you back whatever costs there are, but I'm keeping the profits. What I want, I get. And then it led to tractors and mowing fields and running fruit stands on the side of the road, which turned into, when I was driving, moving fruit stands all over the place. But I agree with you 100%. If you want independence, you've got to go get it financially, especially.
And I never understood that. So they're gone, and you know, we're out partying, we're enjoying ourselves, or what, you know. And at that time, guys, I'm a really big girl. I'm about 250. Like, I'm pretty big. Nobody's hitting on me like that. And we're at this biker bar. I used to hang out in some seedy places. That was just people we knew, people we grew up around. And Nathan had some of his friends from high school come, and one of them brought their cousin that just got out of either prison or jail. I don't remember. And that guy was very flirtatious towards me, which definitely not used to that kind of attention. And it actually caused Nathan and I to argue later on that night. We all went back to our house. Everybody was there. Him and I had gotten into an argument because he did not feel comfortable with this guy hitting on me. They're at our house. I am drunk as can be, and so is he. And I go, I just say, you know what? I'm just going to bed. I don't want to argue anymore. I'm just going to bed. And I went to bed, passed out in my room, door shut. Everybody's out in the living room having a good time. The next thing I know is I wake up and the guy was on top of me, and my husband is beating down the door with a baseball bat. And that night did not make sense on a lot of levels. One is like, how did that even happen? If you're all like, but then I found out later that the guy had him go pick up a friend that wasn't even needing picked up. Like, just a bogus errand, which made, again, no sense, because we don't drink and drive. That is something that we just don't do, and we never have. So I'm like, why were you drinking and driving? And then why would you go alone? Why wouldn't he go with you? Like, I don't even understand any of this. And he doesn't either. He just, like, completely was like, sure, like, super trusting. My husband is the most trusting person. We don't have the same background. Like, he is the most loving person that you would ever meet. He thinks everyone has good intentions, and I'm the complete opposite.
I used to think everyone was good-hearted and from a good place, but I've definitely experienced otherwise in my life, in relationships, in seeing other families, now even in my own family, once you pull back things and you see all the crap that was really going on. But I agree with you, actually. And parents who'd raise their kids in, like, there's butterflies and rainbows and stuff like that, and there's no uncomfortability, you're not doing your kids any favors. Believe me, like, I wasn't done any favors by not having uncomfortability or being protected in those ways, for sure. So yeah. I just want to add that.
I'm the one that's, like, questioning everyone's motive all the time. And some of that's not good, because some of that's just trauma brain that can exaggerate things.
Yeah.
But it's definitely kept me safe. And my intuition always knows. The moment I meet someone, I know. And I'm almost 99.9% right every time. But yeah, so that night.
I want to anchor this real quick. I'm sorry. I wanted you to continue telling the story, but I feel like this is a really important thing to anchor. It's when, like, even in my own case, like, trusting a significant other or a spouse who has been through maybe something or a situation, or growing up in a household that has had trauma or more so than I had in my ways. And then also them trusting me based on my trauma versus the gut instinct over people. Because sometimes I can let the wrong people in. Sometimes if I have a significant other, they can be letting the wrong people in. But you need to have that trust with one another. And I call it the lowest common denominator now. If one of us has a gut feeling, or I'm in a relationship with someone, you have a gut feeling that's bad, we really need to trust that gut feeling. Even if it's wrong, you're better off trusting it than you aren't. And we talked about this a little beforehand and the core values of the humans. And we'll get into that probably in part two. But because I want you to continue to tell this story. But I think it's important that we learn as humans. And I didn't trust other people. I was hesitant of them, especially what happened to me as a kid at one point, particularly what happened to me as an adult. But my gut instinct now, I've learned to trust it. And I've learned to trust the people that actually care about me and love me unconditionally, to trust their gut feeling and not put us in a situation that one of us could get hurt or harmed. This is not saying anything happened wrong, but I've been through bad scenarios where I've now learned. And since we're talking about it, I just want to anchor it with the audience. But please, during that night, sorry, Monica, I interrupted you.
Oh, no, you're spot on. We've been married, this year will be 15 years together. And these are the things we've gone through. This is why we have an ironclad marriage, you know. But now we do definitely, now my husband's like, no matter what anyone, like, he for sure trusts me as we go through many other things on here. So yeah, that night it made no sense. Like, we're trying to piece things together. The next morning, there are friends that are blaming me for it. Saying because the flirtation, and how does he know that I wasn't just trying to sleep with this guy? I'm like, I was passed out. Like, none of it makes sense, you know? But when you start getting that on top of all of it, it was crazy. So, you know, the next morning I had to work, and I did what I always do. I did not call in because that's not me. I went to work. And at work, I kept having these waves of emotions where I'd be completely fine, answer a call like normal, and then I would be completely uncontrollably crying. And then I would be like, what am I doing? I'm at work. I can't be thinking about this right now. And I would straighten up, I'd be fine. And then I would be uncontrollably crying. My brain was trying to process everything, and it could not, like, couldn't do it. One of my friends that I had worked with, and she was like, what is going on with you? And I was like, this is so stupid. I don't even know why I'm having all these issues. Like, I was pretty, like, passed out. I couldn't even, when Nathan was beating down the door, I was frozen. I couldn't even move. And she forced me to go. She didn't force me, but she really strongly recommended that I at least go ahead and file a report and do the rape test kit stuff, because she was like, if you don't do this, you're going to regret it later. And I had a lot of mental around that time of, what if I have AIDS? I don't know anything about this guy other than he was in jail or prison. What if he picked something up and gave it to me? And you know, that region of my body was completely destroyed on top of it. So I can definitely tell you it's nothing that I wanted. I think that part made it hard to hear too with people. You're like, it hurts to sit. It hurts to stand. I mean, I was completely assaulted. So it wasn't like that. And then it's people that you think that you know and trust. I mean, they're in your house. Like, you think you're safe in your house. So there was a lot of things like that was going on.
Monica. I just want to say that I am so sorry. But I'll let you move on. But I just want to say that I feel for you, and I am very sorry. I am a human who knows what it's like to... I was much younger, but I do know what it's like to have some of that happen. And be violated, and have your be violated in ways that are so wrong and uncomfortable. And I am sorry.
Thank you. I really receive that, and I I appreciate that. But I will tell you, I did go through with the test. I went down, they had it like spot that you went to. They did everything that they were supposed to do. Nothing ever came back out of it. That's normal. But at least there's a record. So this, because that was the other thing is that my friend's like, if he's done this to you, he's definitely done it before and he's probably going to do it again. And even if nothing comes about it, there's a record. And it was really tough. It was really, really tough. And the people that were his friends, the cousin, were my husband like, let's hang out again. And he's like, are you kidding me? And they're just like, well, it's not like they were like, it's basically your wife's fault. Like, I mean, our cousin, he's cool, like whatever. And I couldn't do it. I was like, I can never be friends with any of these people again, ever. I wanted to kill myself. I had visions of, I remember driving, I ended up in FMLA and going to therapy for the first time. And only because I had visions of myself running off the road into the median and just dying in a crash. And I was like, it'll look like an accident. It'll be fast. But then the back part of my brain's like, what if it's not? And then I was like, it's my life that I would live. And, but more than that, it was my kids. It was, if I leave them, I don't feel like they're super safe with just their dad at that time in our life. And if I can't figure this out, the other thing that became a huge reality for me is they were going to be suffering the same things I was if I couldn't figure out how to solve it. And I was like, they are fucked if I cannot figure this out. And so I started going to therapy. And, you know, the thing I was mentioning to you guys about being big at that time was the next day, the first thing I said was, but I'm fat. Like, this doesn't happen to big girls. And in my head, in a weird way, not only was the binge eating numbing, it was literally an armor of protection. And it still didn't protect me.
Yeah, I understand that. We create these things that we think are making us safe in the world, and it's actually not true. And so we almost create an imposter syndrome for ourselves.
We did, yeah. And so that was eye-opening, that was my first thought. And all the symbolism that body that I used to have was for me. It was a body of armor. So, you know, in a weird ass way, though, that assault saved my life, guys, because I did go to therapy. At that point, I made a decision, either I'm going to die, and that is for certain at this point, if this is all my life is meant to be, is pain and suffering, or I'm going to have to get better. And, you know, even with my mom, I remember calling my mom and telling her what happened. And my mom, she cried and she said, look at the people you're hanging around. What do you think's going to happen? And that was hard because I got to tell you, I mean, I'm truly a victim in that circumstance, but she's not wrong. At the same time, she's not wrong. But what she never understood, and I don't think sometimes, I think she still has struggles with this, is because my mom always felt like she was worth more than that. Like, she was worth more than my dad's family. She already had a sense of worth when she went through her own shit. And don't get me wrong, imagine your significant other that you have children with being gay. I mean, he did things to her too, and her mental psyche, but she had a sense of worth before that. For me, my worth, that's what I thought I was worth, every bit of it. Until I decided, I just didn't want to suffer. Like I was done suffering, whatever that meant. So I'm going to try it this other way. And if it still doesn't work, then I can go back and look at dying. But I've got to figure this out. And so, I mean, that changed my life for the better. Like it was the worst day and the best day because I dumped a shit ton of friends in a matter of 24 hours that were not good for me. I started eating alone, sitting alone. I started looking at what is it that I want out of life. I stopped drinking all the time. For at least at that time, I had stopped drinking all the time. I had started really just simply going and looking for something positive every day. That's how I started was, all right, every day I'm going to look for a quote or something. And then I got obsessed with all of the self-help gurus, books, shows. Actually, it wasn't books and those things because podcasts weren't there at that time. It was Super Soul Sunday on Oprah Network, where they'd have different guests on there, like Elizabeth Gilstrap, Brene Brown, talking about shame. That's where I learned so much about shame and how it was ruling my decisions and how completely destroying of an emotion shame is. It will destroy your life if you let it in. And, you know, I learned different techniques on letting go. I really was just like, I have to figure this out and whatever tools I can use. I mean, I hate to even admit this, but I would watch Dr. Phil all the time because he would have good advice for some of these fucked up people. And I was a fucked up person. And so I would be like, all right, that's what I need to hear. So it just became a mission to just even think different. I guess I just understood I needed to have different thoughts. That was like step one. I just need to have different thoughts. So I start getting on that path. I start wanting to move up in management. Again, business is the success I've always wanted. That's not been difficult for me. It's not like one day I woke up and I just was like, oh, I want to be successful. That was something as a child. We would tell our mom, we're going to buy your house one day. We're going to take care of you. We're going to be like, there was something in that in me at a young age. But I think it's just that knowing that you've got to do the work, that independence at a young age too.
Monica, I think that this is really important because the one of the things that you're doing is you're having a self-reflection and you're having a pivotal moment that'll change your trajectory. And it came from an outside experience, but the change that actually is taking place is inside of you. And because it's changing inside of you, you're changing your environment, you're changing your mindset, you're changing your perspective, and you're also starting to set real goals for yourself and unleashing the ambitious person that's inside of you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's moving away and letting go of the other side. And one other thing, you know, while I was in therapy and I was talking to my mom, I remember talking about my brother because he never seemed to struggle. Like my brother, if you asked me from the outside, it was like, dude, he went to college for a couple years, decided he got to play around, decide what he wanted to be. He decided he didn't want to be a surgeon in the ER. He wanted to be a pharmacist. So he went to school for that. He's a pharmacist now. Not that it's been an easy road for him necessarily because he's got a lot of his own struggles. That's not a very easy program. He got accepted in one of the top schools. Again, same environment I came from. So, you know, we had different lives. He was going much better than me and I was spiraling downwards. And I just didn't think I had much to offer. My brother at a very young age, he was just very smart. And I always was like, you got all the good genes. He's the smart one. You know, the only thing I like to do is talk to people. That's not going to get me very far. The fact that I like to talk, that's the only thing I have going for me. And for him, dude, he was straight A, AP classes. I had to work five times harder to get my B or my A than he ever had to. He could look at something, memorize it in 2 seconds. That just was never me. And so in my head, I excused his success as just part of who he was. And, but I remember talking to my mom and going, I just don't understand how come I can't let these things go and they're killing me, but he has never struggled with any of this. Like, and am I crazy? Did I not really experience these things because it's just so easy for him and it's not for me? And my mom was like, Monica, he has his struggles too. She goes, he's just strong enough to let it go. He's just strong enough to let it go. And again, that just pierced my ears because I was like, well, fuck that. Like, I'm strong too. Like, I'm strong enough to let it go. Like, because in that moment, I felt like my mom was telling me I'm not strong enough, you know, and he is. And that changed everything too. It's like, no, I want to let it go because I am strong enough to, like, that's the strength, is letting it go. And I've got to figure it out. Maybe it's going to be harder for me, but I'll tell you this. I love the fact now that I'm the person that it takes me 5 laps to get the same result as someone else that only takes them 1 lap. I love that it takes me longer to learn things. It's harder for me to learn things. But the runt is always the best player because they learn that they have to outwork everybody from a young age. It wasn't fair. And my parents didn't let me go. I'm sorry, it's not fair for you. I didn't give 2 shits that it wasn't fair for me. It was, yeah, it sucks, but that's life. You need to figure it out. And I'm so glad that they were that way because now amongst my peers, I'm a total badass. And I don't mean that in a wrong way. I just mean that from the work I've put in and the work I'm willing to do versus the work that my peers are willing to do.
I love this, and I appreciate this, and I'm sorry to do this to you, Monica, but I definitely want to sort of get us ready for a part 2 and get you on again because I think we're at such a good point. I didn't want to stop things when you were in the middle of the other story, I also want to get this all the way through. And the audience, like, this is a very powerful story. And if you heard part 1, and this is not because I'm trying to do anything, it's just because I'm really have a heavy recording schedule right now. And with the writer's strike and my show not being part of the Writers Guild, sort of shot us out of a cannon. So my schedule's been a little bit crazy. But Monica's been very nice, and we've been able to reschedule some things and do her to a part 2. So by no other intent other than trying to make room and tell her whole story, because I didn't want to just give her an hour. I want to give her as much time as she needs, maybe even a part 3, to really tell her story, because her story is extremely impactful. It impacted me when I first heard it now 7 months ago the first time. It's impacted me now. Her story is extremely insightful, and we've only just touched upon the very beginning of it and her journey and her trajectory change and who she became, and then the things that life gave her and how she's now sharing it in her book, that I just, you know, think is so important that everyone understand in the audience that you're not alone out there. And if you really listen to what she's saying, anyone can have struggles in life, and we all can put our mindset somewhere that gets better. And I just want to anchor this. Monica's book is The Power On, Using What's Meant to Destroy You to Create You. So we've heard some of that already and what's going on there. And I appreciate you, Monica. I appreciate the vulnerability and the authenticity in your story. I don't think there's any other way to help people than letting them know that you've been to dark places also and that you've come out of it into the light. So I just want to say thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for allowing me to share and giving me the space to do that. So I'm really excited for part 2. I really appreciate you letting me finish up that side of the story, and we'll pick up next time, guys.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, and I apologize again. Normally, I give everyone more than enough time, but it's just one of those things where my 2-hour blocks have been a little bit eroded right now. So what I do want to emphasize with the audience is that this book, this thing that Monica's doing, her sharing of her story, the path that she's on, you should follow her on Instagram. It's at Monica_Burke, B-U-R-K-E _ power on. Again, Monica, M-O-N-I-C-A _ B-U-R-K-E _ power on, P-O-W-E-R-O-N. It's very important. Her story has been hugely impactful to me. It's her similarities yet differences really let me know that I'm not alone, and that the dark places that I've been because of my environment or because of other humans, especially when we're young and we don't know any better, and the way bad things happen to us, like, it's not our fault, but it is our fault when we don't choose to do something with it or use it as a gift that maybe God gave us. And even though God's not a bad human, he doesn't stop human free will. But what he is sometimes doing is allowing us to go through some things with free will so we can be better humans. So we can go lead other humans against other humans whose free will have harmed them. And so they know they're not alone, because not every human is able to crawl out of it with independence like Monica is or I am. A lot of humans need support groups or need groups. And even that, I will tell you that I quote unquote crawl it out on my own. I did it with books. I did it with mentors. I've done it with podcasts. I've done it with, therapy groups. I've done it with therapy. I've done it with, step programs. All of those things, whether they're God or whatever, they help deal with the spiritual maladies that are put into us because of our environments. And I just want to anchor that with everyone. And Monica's book is definitely a source for a lot of people out there. I mean, it's just endless lessons and life hardships that you've powered through, hence the word power on. And I just wanted to anchor that before we got off. The audience, thank you guys for listening in. If you want to find us, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And we're out for now.